Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
We are a small country, and we cannot afford to lose any war. So when anybody, and we've said at the outset, and this is nothing new to anyone, when anybody harms Israel, if anybody hits Israel, Israel will hit back, not just as a retaliation, but to make sure that they will not, that they will never do that again.
Israel's ambassador to Canada, Ido Moed, on the air with us last half hour. Just looking at a news story, globalnews.ca, and the G7 roundly is condemning Iran for its attack on Israel last night. It quotes President Biden, says in a call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, urged that Israel claim victory for its defensive prowess as the president aimed to dissuade America's closest Mideast ally from a larger retaliatory strike against Iran. There hasn't been one yet. Biden, according to a senior administration official, told Netanyahu that the U.S. would not participate in any offensive action against Iran. So it's ongoing, and as Ambassador Moed told us, there will be retaliation against Iran. We just don't know when. Although I suspect it won't be terribly long. Let's talk to Vivian Berkovich, good friend of this program, former Canadian ambassador to Israel, and State of Tel Aviv is the ambassador's podcast. It's on Substack. Ambassador, thank you for coming on the program. Would you echo Ambassador Moed and when he says there will be retaliation? And he didn't say it, but I certainly got the feeling that it's not going to be terribly long before that happens.
So thanks for having me again, Roy. Pleasure to be here as always. I expect that there will be some form of retaliation. I would be surprised if any decisions in that regard have been taken yet. So speculative to suggest that we know that there will be something soon, very speculative, but there absolutely will be retaliation. I mean, there's no question. Having said that, you know, Israel's mired in a lot right now. We've got this ongoing Gaza situation, you know, sort of half war, the hostages remain in captivity, the Northern Front with Hezbollah, also basically Lebanon's proxy, Iran's proxy. The northern border is very, very hot. And it's sort of like a low boil war. So, I mean, after what happened last night, for Israel to retaliate and risk escalating the situation, I mean, there are very mixed views on that. You know, if it should be done and when and how.
What was it like last evening? Many of us have seen video of the Iron Dome shooting down the incoming missiles and the drones. But what was it like? You're in Tel Aviv, so what was it like last night to have this going on in the skies above Israel?
Insane. Look, I mean, this is, it's almost 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks, it'd be 2 weeks on Tuesday that Israel struck the IRGC general and other IRGC officials in Damascus. So that's what this Iranian attack was linked to. And we've been living with this for 2 weeks, Iran saying, we're going to retaliate. And then it was like, maybe we'll retaliate outside of Israel. And then it became in the last few days, no, we're definitely going to attack Israel. And then all of a sudden on Friday night or Saturday morning, it was within the next 24 to 48 hours. And you're just kind of like, oh my God, you know, things just become very real very quickly. And then last night I was out at the rally in support of the hostages in Tel Aviv. And at around 9 p.m., we got a directive from the Home Front Command, you know, about what to do. It was actually really confusing, but everybody basically went home to be safe. And I think everybody has emergency provisions. And you're just sitting there waiting and watching the TV. And then they start telling us that all of these hundreds of drones and missiles have been launched and they're going to start hitting Israel at 2 in the morning and maybe 9 hours. It was just I don't know how to, it's crazy. You're terrified. You know, you think, I could wake up tomorrow in an apocalypse, right? Like where nothing's working. There's no electricity. There's no food. There's no water. There's no information. I could wake up in a half apocalypse or, you know, everything in between, like, or nothing. I was watching it on TV, on Israeli TV. It was really anxiety inducing. And at a certain point, I just couldn't take it anymore. So to be honest, I took a sleeping pill at around 1:30. I went to sleep. And I woke up about 8 hours later.
Yeah.
But Tel Aviv, I was able to do that. Like Tel Aviv, we had no sirens. There was nothing aimed at Tel Aviv. Jerusalem was really, really bad. They had a lot of sirens and there was like the skies were lit up over Jerusalem and lots of other parts of Israel. But I mean, it's surprising to me that they would target Jerusalem in that way because it has such a large Muslim population. And of course, the holy sites are all there. And, you know, many of the shots from last night on TV were unreal. They were right over the Dome of the Rock, you know, with like dozens of exploding drones and missiles and whatever they were. It was an extraordinary spectacle, but more than the visuals and the really existential fear that I certainly felt, and I know many people did, was this multilateral coming together of all these air forces, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Israel, America, France. There weren't UK planes, but there was UK support. I mean, it's unbelievable that you have this alliance of air power.
Yeah, it's almost as, it was almost as spontaneous. Iran, almost a spontaneous Iran. Alliance, right? It's almost as not entirely spontaneous, but it kind of felt like it.
Yeah, to us it felt like it. But look, the one of the CENTCOM, Central Command of the U.S. Army, one of the generals has been here on the ground for about 2 weeks. Well, since the Syrian attack, the attack in Damascus, which means that there's a whole lot of other people behind him. That doesn't happen spontaneously.
No,
there's probably a lot of planning. And Saudi Arabia is trying to keep a low profile, but an extraordinary, extraordinary effort and wildly successful.
Yeah. So I was thinking, Ambassador, that when Iran is attacked, and they will be, I mean, we've been told that essentially we expect it to happen.
Right.
I'm just wondering whether it's going to be more of a combined, some sort of coalition and effort where Israel's at the tip of the spear, but logistical and other support will come from some of the other countries that assisted Israel last night.
Yeah, I think that the U.S. has made things very clear, and it's all driven by politics at this point. You know, President Biden's made very clear, we'll support you with defensive measures and operations, but nothing offensive. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that any of the other countries that participated last night would support an offensive operation from Israel. Certainly not something public and spectacular like Iran did to Israel last night. Doesn't have to be that, though. I mean, you know, there are lots of other much quieter ways of responding and retaliating.
Yeah.
What Israel's been more inclined to do in the past.
Right.
You know,
most of us, I think Hollywood, we think Hollywood when we think of these things.
Oh, my God. Right? Last night was total Hollywood. It was crazy.
Yeah, I watched some of that stuff on some of the video and it was stunning. Is the situation now? When last night happened and when there's retaliation and we already see the situation, we've seen the anger on the streets in this country and other countries. Mm. Does what's going on now make finding some sort of, even if it's temporary, resolution or a pause, ceasefire, if you will, does it make it more difficult to accomplish or not?
Well, I think what happened last night doesn't necessarily make a ceasefire in Gaza more difficult. What makes a ceasefire in Gaza more difficult is the fact that Hamas came back also last night and said, we're not making any deal. We're not interested in any negotiations. So if Hamas is not prepared to negotiate at all, and is just basically shutting the door, then what is there? Like, why would there be a ceasefire?
No, well, you can't have a ceasefire if
you can't.
If one so side
that's
says me. No.
Yeah, that's the block there. I think that, you know, they're, everything's linked, of course, but I think they're quite separate issues in that regard. Mm-hmm. But I have to make this point that I was just watching on the news here. They were showing clips from Tehran and cities around Iran, and you know, the streets of Toronto, they look the same as Tehran. And that's a really sad comment. And the riots, they are riots. They're just hate riots all over Canada, but especially in Toronto. They're making the news internationally. We've distinguished ourselves. We're even worse in London. What happened yesterday was horrible. Just I'm sorry, I have to say this, that, you know, our prime minister in the midst of all this goes to a press gallery dinner. I just, like, shake my head. This was one of the most probably important air battles since World War II. It was just extraordinary. The alliances, the air forces that worked together, that had probably been training clandestinely for a number of weeks, maybe months. What was at stake was we could have been in World War III today.
I was thinking that last night.
Yeah, absolutely. So was I. I'll tell you.
You know, when I left the radio station yesterday, everything was as it normally is around here. And you know, right. Southern Ontario very well. I mean,
yeah, you're
from Toronto. And I thought, but everything that's going on, you know, here's a pizza delivery guy delivering the pizza. Mm. Here, people are going about doing what they do and being happy that it's warmer and the sun is out and different parts of the country, you know, the weather's different. But life went on and goes on in this country as it does. But we have to remember, in other parts of the world, things are very different. Ambassador, so on your podcast, State of Tel Aviv, at Substack.com. Mm-hmm. What? How did you cover this with Yaakov Katz, who's one of the most respected journalists? People in Israel, would they say that he's to the left of center?
Oh, gosh, no.
No?
But, you know, that all of that stuff has gotten very muddied. I think Yaakov is definitely center right. He was a political aide to Naftali Bennett.
Okay.
You know, right and left have become kind of irrelevant categories, not just here, in many places. But just before we get into that, my podcast is State of Tel Aviv, all one word, .com.
.com.
Easy to find.
Okay.
Yeah.
I throw in State Substack, because that's what we saw.
Yeah, it is on Substack, but you just get it by the web handle.
State of Tel Aviv.com.
Correct.
Okay. I like to be correct.
Yeah, I do Sundays with Yaakov. It's been a regular thing since January. Every Sunday, we spend a half hour or so just kind of talking about what's gone on the past week and what's coming.
So what were you talking about today?
So today we were talking about Yaakov. He was supposed to leave last night, actually, travel to New York for a conference. And the car was waiting, bag was packed. His flight, it was the last one out of Dodge. And he didn't go. At the last minute, he said, no, I'm not going, because his kids were terribly anxious and, you know, said, Daddy, am I going to die tonight? And he thought, I need to be here. So he stayed home, and it's a good thing he did, because Jerusalem was much different than Tel Aviv. There were lots of booms, and lots of rockets were targeting that area. We talked about how successful the Israeli air defenses were, more successful, I think, frankly, than people anticipated. Yaakov's a real expert in weapons. So if anybody's interested, you got to listen to the podcast and listen to him talk about it. But there are lots of, you know, there's the Iron Dome, there's David Sling, there are three or four defense missile and drone defense systems. We talked about the challenges, because Israel does have a bit of a hole in its air defense systems with respect to drones. You know, it's asymmetrical warfare, right? So Hezbollah uses drones a lot, Houthis. It's something that's used by kind of paramilitary forces, terrorist groups. They're cheap. They're easy to obtain. They fly at a low altitude, and they fly slowly. And so they're much harder to detect with sophisticated radar. So I know that Israel needed a lot of help with, in identifying and neutralizing the drones. And there were dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of drones. We really don't know the breakdown of how many missiles, what kind of missiles. Yaakov discussed the different kinds of missiles that may have been launched. We don't have that kind of detail. But what we do know is that, again, all of the air forces scrambled, collaborated, and shot down 99% of what Iran had aimed at Israel.
That's amazing. Now, when you think about that, that is amazing, isn't it?
But
it
also, really I want to say that there were two countries that denied access to their airspace to Israel, to the Israeli Air Force last night, Qatar and Kuwait. And there's a special place somewhere for those two countries in that kind of situation. But yeah, 99%, more than 99% were shot down, neutralized.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to find out what people are actually saying. Interesting people are saying, well, everybody's interesting, but what some people are saying, and my opportunity now is to speak with you, what people are saying who are in the middle of something that's developing, because so many of us saw video of what went on last night over the skies of Israel, and it looked like it looked like Armageddon for a while. Some of it was really, really scary to see. Ambassador, it's always good talking to you. Stateoftelaviv.com.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
I got it right, eh?
You did. Okay. Well done.
Thank you.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.